Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stand by for an urgent bulletin.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
Who's better at this job of radio?
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Jeff Lutz.
Really good to great, you know, depending on the day.
Wow! Hey! Isn't that exciting?
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
It's showtime, baby! You'll go wacko, bananas, nuts, crazy, unbelievable!
Hello again, everybody. Welcome a Thursday edition of the Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. I'm Bob Lutz, Jeff Lutz co-hosting. Max Power is our producer and our engineer. 869-1240, that's the IHOP hotline. I'm watching a baseball game. It's on the television here in my basement studio, paying some attention. My team, Cardinals, not going anywhere, but I love the game of baseball. Enjoy watching it. Jeff's keeping track of his team. He's in a sour mood, and that's the way it is here.
You said I'm in a sour mood.
Well, you just muttered under your breath 5 minutes ago when Giancarlo Stanton homered, and it's tough being a baseball fan.
I never fathomed that a team 20 games over 500 could be this sickening.
You're playing poorly at the wrong time of the year.
They haven't played well in 2 months.
Well, but you're playing poorly now at the wrong time of the year. And that happens. And what I told you yesterday holds true. The teams that are destined to win play well in the final 6 to 8 weeks of the year. It's just the way it works.
You know who I'm not impressed with at all?
Me.
Steven Vogt.
Well, there you go. Now you've taken a shot at a manager who's come in, by all accounts, overachieved.
No,
with a
he
roster
hasn't.
That
he has
is,
no feel. He's got no feel for trends. He's got no feel for what a team needs. He's got doesn't seem to have any feel for coaching and developing.
You loved him a month ago.
No, well, I don't anymore. No feel. And it takes a while to.
My team's two games under. They've played pretty poorly for the last month. Yet here I am with some level of. I just told you, you know, watching Victor Scott play excites me. He's hitting about 140, but he excites me because I think it's there. I like to, as you know, kind of stake my reputation on things. I believe in that kid. I think he's going to be a very good Major League Baseball player. And those are the things I hold on to as my team has pretty much crumbled.
Well, you hope he's going to be a good
hope,
Major
right.
League.
Right. But I also think
okay,
he's going to be.
Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But we all get caught up in young players and prospects. And
not all of them.
We all hope.
Not all of them. He has certain attributes that make him stand out, and you saw one of them just a minute ago where he hit a ball into left center field. Maybe one out of every 100 players could turn that into a double. He's one of those who can with his speed. That excites me. I'm not going to be the pessimist, even though we just fly it out with the bases loaded, which we do. We never get a hit.
Don't be a pessimist.
Other than last night when Arenado hit a grand slam.
I don't want to talk about baseball.
We never get a hit with anybody on.
Let's talk Royals and Chiefs.
And I don't want to talk Royals
that's what
and
people
Chiefs.
Come
people don't come to our show to hear Royals
station.
And Chiefs. I don't want to talk
Let's
Royals
get folks
and Chiefs.
Ready. Let's get folks ready.
Now, we will talk Royals going down the stretch here because they're in contention. They won a game last night. Johnny Cueto pitched for the Angels. That's how dire their circumstances are.
Didn't pitch horribly either.
No, but if you're...
He didn't pitch well.
If you're rolling Johnny Cueto out, you've got more problems. And then they just extended their general manager.
Makes no sense.
Tell me what's going on there.
I can't.
You couldn't be a worse franchise. Bringing back Ron Washington. We all love Ron Washington. Shouldn't be managing a baseball team in 2024. That's ridiculous.
Well, he should. If he was going to manage, he should be managing a good team.
I don't even know. Listen, he had his time. He's an excellent instructor, but managing is completely different.
I understand. I'm just saying, if he was going to manage, it should be for a team that doesn't really need managing.
Now, they did obviously lose Shohei. Mike Trout again injured, and I'm starting to think that Mike Trout is never going to play a full season again in the Major League Baseball. I mean, don't we have enough evidence?
Well, I don't think he will, and it's unfortunate, and it's sad because he was a generational talent, putting up unbelievable numbers early in his career, and that's kind of gone by the wayside. He'll end up with great numbers, but it won't be generational numbers. It won't be otherworldly numbers. We'll recognize his talent as one of the game's greats to ever play, but we won't recognize the numbers that way.
There'll always be a sadness associated with Mike Trout, which is too bad. You don't like to have that with players. There's even a sadness associated to some degree with a player like Mickey Mantle, because you feel like, as great as Mantle was, and check the numbers, you feel like he left a lot on the table.
Could have.
It's hard to say.
Which is sad.
It's hard to say.
Well, I think through his injuries and his lifestyle, even Mickey Mantle acknowledged it late in his life.
Probably, yeah, he did.
That he, you know, regretted some of his antics. But still, the numbers are overwhelming for Mickey Mantle. For Mike Trout, I'm not sure. They are great. He's certainly one of the great players of his era. Is it enough, in your opinion, to get him into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, that's not even a question. He's first ballot.
Well, wait a doggone minute.
That's not even a debate.
Wait a minute.
It's not a debate.
Well, why am I having a debate?
I'm not sure, to be completely honest.
Let's see here.
Zero question about that.
He's not driven in 1,000 runs yet. He will. I think he'll still play. He's only at 980. He has 378 home runs. That's certainly...
He spent a lot of time in the leadoff spot.
I'm sorry, he's at 954 RBIs. 1,600 hits. OPS of 991, which is superb. So I would probably... It's a three-time MVP. I would agree with you.
Right.
But the numbers could be so much better.
They could be.
They could be right up there.
That's what I said.
He's played since 2017. Now, he was an Ironman from 2013 to 2016, played in at least 157 games every year. In 2017, 114. In 2018, 140. Drove in 122 runs that year. Had his highest ever OPS of 1.088 and an OPS plus of 198. So that was his best year. Then 134 games, and then we had the COVID year of 2020. He only played in 36 games in 2021, 119 in 2022, and then 82 and 29 the past 2 years.
Trending the wrong direction for old Mike.
But these are his prime years. He's 32. He's missing his prime years.
Well, I think he probably wouldn't have the numbers that he put up without the way that he played, which was all out. And he's a big guy, and it's probably going to be injured at some point anyway.
You know how many playoff series he's been in?
One.
You know who it was against?
The Royals.
You know who saw it?
I was there.
You were there?
No. But I watched it. Does
well,
that count?
I was there.
It's unfortunate. He shouldn't have
I don't like people who do what I just did. My apologies.
What did you do?
I was there. Like, so what?
I don't like people who tie themselves to a terrible franchise for their entire careers, and then neither of those sides gets the most out of the relationship.
Well, I feel terrible for Mike Trout, although he made millions upon millions of dollars.
Yeah, I'm sure he's... I'm sure he feels happy with his life overall, but maybe not as happy with his career overall.
Here's another one. Joey Votto announces his retirement yesterday.
Sales in.
He'd been with the Blue Jays. I don't think he'd played very much, but he had played some in their AAA team. He retires. Hall of Famer.
Sales in. First ballot.
First ballot?
No question.
First ballot?
No question.
Well, I don't know, man.
No question.
920 career OPS, 1,144 RBIs, 356 homers, 2,135 hits. Yeah, I don't know about sailing in.
He's sailing in. He'll get 85 to 90% of the vote on his first ballot, and he'll sail in.
The CC Sabathia sail in?
I sure hope so.
I told him at our function a few weeks ago that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. You think he appreciated that, or you think he felt like, what's this clown telling?
He probably felt like you were pandering a little bit, but that's okay.
Well, I don't care, but I think he, so what?
I told him, here's
what. You didn't get a chance to talk to him.
Of course I did.
Here's what you said. Mr. Sabathia. What'd you say to him?
Well, he had been in Cleveland the previous few days because he was getting inducted into the Cleveland baseball team Hall of Fame. And what?
Go ahead.
And he had said something like, I want to apologize to the fans for game 6 of the 2007 ALCS. I didn't get the job done. And I said, hey, you didn't need to apologize for that. And he said, I appreciate it.
And then he sprinted away.
Why? Why can't I just have a... Why? Why would he sprint away?
That probably got a little uncomfortable.
Why?
I don't know.
Explain that. I mean, what would make him uncomfortable about that?
Some guy talking about 2000 whatever. I don't know.
He talked about it.
Yeah, but he talked about it, but you brought it up.
So what's wrong with that?
I don't know. I'm just glad I wasn't there.
Me too. You would have ruined it.
Well, I don't know if I would have or not.
No, you would have. You're ruining this kind of too, so there's a lot of things going on.
Well, congratulations on having a moment with CC Sabathia, who was here for the unveiling of the Jackie Robinson statue.
I've never asked you this question. Joe Torre was slated to attend. Was it?
I wasn't told why. I just was told that he was never officially slated to attend. He was a possibility to attend.
All right.
So any news outlet that got out there and said Joe Torre.
Well, I think you said Joe Torre.
No, I didn't say it. No, I never said it. I'm not even sure I said it was a possibility. I may have told you privately because at one point his name was mentioned. But so were a couple of others that ultimately didn't arrive. But we were happy. We
Thank
had
you.
CC Sabathia, Jeremy Guthrie, and Dellen Betances. And had Dellen Betances remained healthy for his career, his numbers are ridiculous. Have you ever looked at his numbers?
Dellen Betances? Yeah, he was quite good.
Well, no wonder. He's 6'9", 500. Throws 400 miles an hour.
Big guy.
Here's what we have for you today on the show. What are you engaged in?
I'm trying to
engage with me.
I'm trying to find where you said Joe Torre.
See, that's all you live for. That's all you live for.
What are you talking about?
You like to show people that they're wrong.
No, I don't.
You like to engage in, like you did today on Facebook, you like to engage and try to get the upper hand. It's just not a becoming thing. At 2:25, John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant will talk KU football. KU football preview with John Kirby. At 2:45, Tim Fitzgerald, gopowercat.com. K-State football preview. So if you are a Jayhawk or a Cat, you'll want to listen here as we come up on those interviews, talking KU and K-State football. And then at 3:25, Scott Russell will join the show. He's another who is headed to the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame. He's out of Canada, but a collegiate track and field standout in the javelin and the hammer throw at Kansas, and one of the greats. He'll be, as I said, headed to the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame. 869-1240 is the phone number. The Royals have an off day. Then they start a really brutal stretch of their schedule. And how will they hold up?
You're asking me?
I am.
I don't know. I assume they want to play around 500 and keep pace with what everybody else in the division is doing. No one, despite many opportunities for all the teams because of the way Cleveland has played, which is, like you said, poorly, no one has been able to catch them for whatever reason so far. But they've had chances, and maybe over the last 8 weeks of the year, however long it is, not that long.
I believe the Twins Six and weeks. Royals are both off today. Am I right about that?
I believe
the Twins,
so.
Twins did salvage a game on the West Coast against San Diego yesterday. They are 2.5 out. The Royals, the same, identical, 71-56 records. If the score holds up today in Cleveland with the Yankees, that is in Cleveland, is it not?
No.
It's in New York. Cleveland's lead in the American League Central will be 2 games over both the Twins and the Royals. Interesting.
That's how it works.
Now, I'm not going to hold back just because I know you're a Guardians fan.
I don't need whatever you're about to say.
Well, I'm not. What do you mean you don't need what I'm about?
Whatever you're about to say, I just don't need it.
Well, I don't care what you need. I'm here to talk about what needs to be talked about. Royals begin a series at home Friday against the Phillies, which will be interesting. 4 at Cleveland, followed by 4 at Houston. Those are the games. Those 8 games are going to be difficult. Now, I don't know if Cleveland can get it going enough to make those games difficult, but they better. Then the Royals come home for 3 against Cleveland and 3 against Minnesota before going on the road to play the Yankees, and then a series on the road against Pittsburgh. So those games all happen between tomorrow and September 15th. That's going to be very telling.
Extremely. And it's, I don't know what to say. We'll find out how they play when they play. It's impossible to predict. Maybe they'll keep their heater going against all these really, really good teams. Maybe they'll be average. Maybe they'll fall out of the race. It's hard to say.
This is what you live for as a baseball fan. This is what you want to have happen. Royals haven't had much of this over the last
10 years
in their existence. They had a great run in the 70s. They had some success in the 80s. But really, outside of 2014, 2015, that's been about it. And here they are, potentially 2 games out of first place after today.
No, not potentially.
Playing
the Guardians
well,
are going to come back.
With the arguably the second best player in the game. Aaron Judge can't be matched. What, he hit another one today?
Yeah, one of those cheap ones. But if I was Aaron Judge, I'd do the same thing. Just hit the ball to right field. I know I'm strong enough to where it's going to fly out of there. So good for Aaron Judge. If the Guardians could have figured out how to do that, that'd be great. But they're swinging 3-0 at bad pitches and taking horrible at-bats.
Well, Aaron Judge now has 48 home runs.
I'm aware.
118 RBIs. And we have 6 weeks left in the season. It's ridiculous. I don't care where you play. You play in my backyard where the dimensions are not very long, and you do that, my goodness. And Mitchell for the Brewers just robbed Lars Nootbaar of a home run, and that's my world.
What are you going to do?
My frustration with baseball is at least much higher than yours.
Well, you don't need to take it out on me.
Was 20 games over.
No, you wouldn't. If they were playing like garbage,
I'd be
and uninspired and
I'd be dancing in the street. Look at that catch. My goodness. The Brewers are so good defensively. You can't hit a ball to get by them.
That's part of what makes a really good team. It's not just hitting and pitching. You got to run the bases. You got to play defense. Do the little things well.
All right. We're ready to preview some football. We've been doing it for the past week and a half or so. And we're going to hit home today. Tim Fitzgerald at 2:45 talking about Kansas State. But up next is John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant. We'll get his thoughts on Kansas. The Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
John Kirby joins us from Jayhawk Slant. He's knee-deep into KU football, and we're excited for the college football season that's just around the corner. We've been talking Big 12 football on this show for a couple of weeks. This conference, and first of all, welcome, John. How are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. How you doing?
We're doing well, and I think the story going into this season is just how up for grabs the Big 12 appears to be. We're not talking one, two, or three challengers. It feels like there's multiple teams that go into the season thinking they got a shot.
Yeah, you know, we do a podcast, and I had Phil Steele on. I always like Phil. I think he's pretty knowledgeable. He said he's got nine teams that he thinks could come out of the Big 12 somehow, some way, among the top two. I mean, I thought that was a little much, but you're right. I think that goes to show you that, you know, this thing's wide open, and there's going to be some key games where it comes down middle into the season that's probably going to factor in how it all plays out.
So last year, obviously, it was Jason Bean as the backup to Jalen Daniels. He played a lot, and he played really well. He's no longer there, of course. So how big is the drop-off, do you think, between Jason Bean and Cole Ballard or whoever will end up kind of being that backup long-term? But also, how much better is the overall roster that maybe that won't make as big of a difference if Jalen can't play the whole season?
Well, the overall roster is really good. I mean, now they are senior heavy. Okay. Now, after this season, we're going to have to talk about kind of a little bit of an overhaul of what they're going to have to do. Because, I mean, they've got a lot of experience, a lot of snaps, a lot of upperclassmen who are back. So, you know, when you guys talk about Jason Bean, man, what a luxury they've had with him. And I've said all summer long, this season comes down to one thing, and that's the health of Jalen Daniels. And, guys, the thing is, Kansas fans have got to hope that at this point they're not talking about the backup quarterback this season, all right? I mean, Jalen Daniels has got to stay healthy because there is no Jason Bean to fall back on. I mean, you know, when he came to Kansas, he had some D1 experience at North Texas, and he had a skill set. You know, he was a 10-4-5, 10-5 guy in the 100 in high school. He had a skill set that fit into what they did. So when Jalen Daniels went out, Jason Bean kind of came in, and they didn't change the offense a lot for him. There were very few teams in the country that had that luxury of having someone like Bean. Now, if Jalen Daniels gets hurt, this year's different, because there is no Bean, and I don't know that Ballard and Marshall can step up and play like Bean did. Listen, when they played K-State last year, they had a great game plan. They had K-State on their heels all game long, okay? They ran option. They had Cole Ballard. They had him out in some QB draws, but they couldn't do really what they wanted to do. They kind of protected Cole Ballard in the scheme they had that game against Kansas State. He was a game manager. You know, he had a couple bad plays. So I've heard the battle between Cole Ballard and Isaiah Marshall for that backup spot is pretty tight. I hear the edge right now is with Cole Ballard just because he's got a year of experience in their system.
Talking to KU football with John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant. Jayhawks open the season next Thursday against Lindenwood. I got them winning that game. How important is that second game at Illinois? Now, Illinois is not a preseason ranked team. We're not really sure what Illinois is going to do, but how important is it for Kansas to go to Champaign and play really well in that game and kind of establish something? Am I barking up a wrong tree? It just feels to me like that game's pretty consequential.
No, you're not barking up the wrong tree. I mean, I have been saying this all summer, okay? And there's some pretty heavy confidence on the Kansas fan base that, hey, KU's just going to walk into Illinois and beat them without breaking much of a sweat. That really is the feel, because I've even gone on our message board at times and said, guys, I think this is a game you got to be really careful on. Okay, Kansas took it to them, built a big lead, just kind of coasted to a pretty easy victory last year. Okay, now you're turning around. You're going on a revenge game. You're on the road. You're playing a Big Ten opponent at their place in the evening. I'm just telling you, I think that game's going to be a challenge. And maybe I'm wrong, but this just isn't a cakewalk. And I've gotten a sense from people that they look what happened last year. And I mean, KU blew them out of the water and then just kind of let off the gas a little bit. And I mean, Illinois is going to be ready for that football game.
I was going to ask just because of, you know, you mentioned the timeline and a lot of seniors this year, and it may be a little bit of an overhaul next year. Can you tell us about some of the talented freshmen on this team and also just how much better? It was already good, but how much better Lance Leipold's recruiting has gotten over the last couple of years?
Yeah, this class is really good, okay, the class that just came in. And now here's the thing, though. We may not be able to see how talented some of these guys are, okay? I've heard some of them have looked good in fall camp. They just got on campus 2 months ago. But I've heard some of them have looked good in fall camp. But the problem is, guys, you're talking about a team that is returning 85-90% of their starters. You're talking about a team that's basically going to start a bunch of seniors. So, you know, you may have some guys on the O-line who look good. They're just buried right now because there's so many guys returning. You might have a young receiver who looks good, but Kansas returns their top five receivers. You might have a running back who looks good, but they return their top three running backs. You see where I'm going with this? I mean, there are kids who are in the program that have talent and have ability, but I don't know if some of them are going to get on the 2D just because of what's returning.
Interesting stuff from John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant. We're talking KU football. With the new Big 12 and all the new teams that have come in the past couple of years, certainly no more balanced schedule. And the schedule, I'm caught up in them because they mean a lot. And there are some ranked teams in the Big 12 going into this season. Utah, Arizona, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, Kansas. But on KU's schedule is only one of those, and that's Kansas State. This is a pretty favorable schedule to have a pretty monumental season.
It is. There is no doubt that the schedule gods worked out in their favor on this one. I mean, they dodged some tough games. I mean, when you look up and down the schedule, you know, at West Virginia and at Kansas State, I mean, those are the two games that you circle right now and say, God, if there's any way you could win one of those two or something, I mean, you could seriously be looking down and an 11-1 or a 10-2 type. Now, there's some tricky games on there. You don't know what TCU is going to bring to Lawrence. And, you know, when you go on the road to somewhere like BYU, that's kind of a, you know, that's a tricky place to play. Then you've got the game against Iowa State. You know, I heard the other day from some people inside KU that they get calls and emails, and the people at Arrowhead Stadium, they've been getting them for 3 weeks from Iowa State fans saying, hey, when can we buy tickets? So there's going to be a lot of Iowa State people at that game in Arrowhead. But when you look down the schedule, I think the two games that you sit here and say, I don't know that Kansas will be favored, and that's at West Virginia and at Kansas State, and everything else from there, I mean, there's a good chance they're favored to win all those other games.
Can you tell us just there's so many good players on this team. You've talked about it. Is there anyone returning who can find an even another level than what they've done in the past? Is there anyone who hasn't quite maybe reached their ceiling yet that we can look for that this year?
Yeah, there's a few, and I've got to start with Jalen Daniels. I mean, this is a guy, you know, not long ago, people were talking about him in the Heisman race, okay? The problem is he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. So when you talk about a guy with a ceiling or someone that hasn't shown what he can do, we want to see what Jalen Daniels can do if he can stay healthy for an entire year, because I think he's a pretty special player. I mean, I've seen a lot of lists that a lot of people have him in the top 10 quarterbacks in the country and definitely among the top quarterbacks in the Big 12. So to me, that's the key, is can he stay healthy? And then if he does, I think, Bob and Jeff, I think that we're going to see what he can do for a whole season, because we haven't seen that yet. Kansas has, I'll tell you, one of the deepest positions they've got on the team. Their defensive tackles, they go about six deep. And last year, they rotated guys and kept them fresh. And that was one of the big things that I think that people haven't talked about from last year's team. Kansas's defense went from 12th in total defense to 4th in the Big 12 last year. That is the reason that they were successful last year. We always know Kansas can score points. We didn't know if they could stop anybody. Last year, they got off the field more. And one of the reasons was, they have some guys who can rotate on the inside. They had five guys who played 150 more or more snaps on the interior. A lot of those guys are back, and some of these young kids have looked good in camp. I mean, they're going to go six defensive tackles deep. So, I mean, that is something to watch through the season, because I think they're going to be able to hold up on the defensive line.
Talking to KU football with John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant. So I got to ask you about this season, where the home games are going to be played at Arrowhead Stadium, and then the unbelievable project that's going on campus at KU for the new football stadium there, $400 million. I've been around a long time. I'm not sure I ever thought we'd get to this day where Kansas was investing like this in football. I've always thought KU was a sleeping giant. Seems to be waking up. Tell us about playing this season at Arrowhead and then the future of Kansas football in that new facility in Lawrence.
Yeah, you know, the first two games are at Children's Mercy Park. So I think that's going to be a great atmosphere. It's kind of a smaller stadium, a little bit more enclosed. Everybody's right on top of the field. And there's only, what, 18,500 or 19,000 seats that are going to be there. So your season ticket holders are going to take up most of that. And then I've heard there's, you know, going to be a smaller allotment for students to get in. Those first two games will be sold out, but I think it's going to be a great atmosphere, and it's going to be loud just because I think it's going to be a packed stadium in the way that that thing's built. Then when you go to Arrowhead, you know, the question is going to be, can you capture more KU fans in Kansas City that maybe didn't get to Lawrence for games, but with the game being in Kansas City, they say, hey, we're going to go over to Arrowhead? Because I tell you this right now, there are KU fans who don't have season tickets to KU football games, but they have season tickets to the Chiefs. Okay, so it'll be interesting just to see what they can draw there. And then obviously with the facilities coming in, guys, I mean, it's $450 million right now. And when I'm around there, you know, I'll look up at the stadium, and you can just see the progress coming in. And the other day we were in the indoor for media day. I mean, you know, that indoor facility, it's very nice. They just built that not too long ago. So when you take the renovation they're doing with Anderson Family Football Complex and then what they're doing with the indoor and then what they're doing in the booth, I mean, there's not going to be much left to fix. I mean, everything's going to be looking pretty good.
And I can't let you go without asking you about my personal favorite Kansas player, and that's running back Devin Neal. I love watching him play. I think he's primed to have just an incredible season. I think he's going to go to the NFL and be great. Am I wrong about any of that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's a talented guy. I thought the one thing last year, I've always said I wondered about Devin's top-end speed. But last year, and I've been meaning to ask him about this, But he played faster last year. And when he hit some holes and some creases, he got past outside linebackers and safeties and got into open space for some nice runs. So, yeah, he's got everything. I mean, he's strong. And I'll tell you, Bob, one of the things that helps Devin Neal, you know, another guy, he's been banged up here and there the last couple of years because they end up relying on him so much. A healthy Daniel Hyshaw behind him, I think, makes Devin Neal better because he takes some of those bumps and bruises away from him later in the season with some of the carries. So, yeah, hey, Devin Neal, listen, he's got a chance to leave out of Kansas in the record book. So, I mean, when he's all said and done, he could be the leading rusher in KU football history.
All right, we really appreciate it. Lots of information to digest. John, thank you so much. We'll talk to you as the season unfolds.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on.
John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant, our KU football preview. It's only Thursday. Feels like Friday in some ways.
It does.
Tim Fitzgerald may or may not join us. He's got a therapy session, physical therapy session, coming up at 3, so I've given him the option of being on tomorrow. We'll see.
See what he does.
We don't want him to hurry. We don't want to hurry through K-State. I'm very interested in learning about the Wildcats. I feel like these Big 12 football previews have increased my anticipation for the season.
Sure. I wouldn't argue
Not
with
you.
That.
Do you care about the season?
I'm trying to think about whether I'm going to choose to care about college football this year. Now, will I watch it?
You've got a daughter up at K-State.
And will I pay attention? Sure, I'll do all that. But will I truly care? And for me, at this stage of my life, caring equals investing in something more than just I like the game. So will I watch all K-State's games? Will I watch all KU's games?
Well, no, I won't do that.
Will I watch?
I'll watch as many as I
will
can.
Will I watch Notre Dame?
I'm not talking. It's about watching good games. I'm not invested in being a fan of a team.
I'm not invested in Alabama, Georgia. You know, I mean, I'm not invested in that. That game, I'll watch it and won't mean anything to me. And then
I'll look at the Saturday schedule. And even now that we play every day, I'll watch the games that interest me, like I always have.
Okay. Well, I just told you how it would work.
I'm not
work
a fan
for me.
Of a team.
Fine. You don't have to be. I've just told you how it works for me. That you don't have to equate that to you. That's the beautiful thing about life.
Well, you're wrong.
No, nobody's wrong.
How in the world could you not want to watch Georgia, Alabama? I don't understand.
Why is that wrong?
Well, it's wrong. It's wrong.
Not really.
As a sports fan, as someone who's on a sports show.
It's not a big loosely. College football fan. And I'm not going to be, my fandom is not going to be aided by the fact that Oregon plays Rutgers. And
what about this one? What about K-State Tulane on Saturday, September 7th?
Sure.
You'll watch that ball game?
Probably.
Okay. What about this one? Let me find some.
I'll probably watch KU and K-State. That's probably what I'll do.
So coming up next Thursday night, okay? Next Thursday night's kind of the opening. We have 4 games this Saturday. Florida State at Georgia Tech. Very interesting that they open with a conference game, but I'm not totally into that. So
some conferences do that.
Coming up the first weekend, I'm trying to find the game. Will you watch next Saturday, the 31st, will you watch Clemson at Georgia?
No.
Well, that's just, how do you, I don't know, how do you.
What's in that for me?
Well, that's a great game.
Georgia's going to beat them by 1,000.
Well, that's a good game. That's the 2 ranked teams. Will you watch, given our discussions about Big 12 football, will you watch Penn State in Morgantown to face West Virginia?
No.
Well, you got that on at the same time as Clemson, Georgia. Why couldn't you just switch back and forth and watch those games?
That sounds like not fun. But maybe. I mean, you never know how bored I might get or how comfortable I might get on the couch. I'm not getting up, and there's Penn State.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Later in the day, 2:30 kickoff. Will you watch Colorado State at Texas? Texas's first game as a member of the SEC.
I'd rather throw my television in the backyard.
Well, I don't get it.
Than watch that game.
That in some ways makes me sad.
Are you going to watch that?
What about this one? Later that evening on the ABC, will you watch Notre Dame in College Station to face Texas A&M?
Maybe.
Okay, there you go.
Told you I'm a little of a Notre Dame guy. I've always said that, but I've never really committed to it.
There you go.
So maybe I'll commit to it this year.
Now we're
I love the state of Indiana.
Now we're getting somewhere. And how about this one? On Sunday, next Sunday, September 1, USC at LSU. Will you watch that?
No, I will not.
Well, I don't understand it.
That is why.
Don't you want to see USC as a Big Ten?
No.
Don't you want to see how they'll do on the road?
Not really.
At LSU?
I'll look at the score, and that'll be plenty for me. Is that good?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't get it.
Are you going to watch that game?
Sure. Depends on what else is happening.
You're pretty high-pitched. Sure.
Sure I'll watch it.
That's a no. It sounded like a no to me.
The way I am with college football is I'll watch bits and pieces of several games. I usually don't sit down. It's unusual that I'll sit down and watch a full college football game. Does that make sense?
Sure. But I might.
I'll probably watch much more K-State because I like it that they have Avery Johnson and Dylan Edwards.
I think everybody likes that.
I like our locals. So that's more meaningful to me than the KU combo of Devin Neal and their quarterback.
I'm headed to Manhattan tomorrow.
Visiting the youngster? You miss her that badly?
No, we're just going to go visit now that
that's nice of you.
Now that she's fully in her dorm.
Where are you going?
Started classes after the show.
How do you stay on the weekend? Or
no, we'll come back Saturday evening probably.
Going out to eat?
I imagine something like that will occur.
Well, that's nice.
Just hang out.
Where do you go in Manhattan?
Well, we went to Hoo Ha last week. I don't know where we'd go if we had like a full day and time to explore. We haven't really had that chance yet, so maybe on Saturday we'll figure something out.
Tim Fitzgerald will not be appearing today. He used an expletive and then he said I forgot, too busy, let's do tomorrow. So we'll set it up with Tim Fitzgerald for tomorrow. We'll also be talking Arizona football with Jason Shear from the Tucson Citizen.
And no Duda.
How do you know?
Well, you said he's not on this week.
He's penciled in to do the three-man tomorrow.
Really? I thought he'd never appear on the show again.
Duda has a meaningful life, apparently.
I guess. It's interesting, though. I mean, it's hard to I get it. He wants to be involved in his kids' lives. That's fantastic.
Well, I mean, the kid, one's a senior, one's a freshman. These are fleeting times. I understand it.
But I feel like
I didn't do a radio show when you were did I?
I don't know. You started it my freshman year of college. But there were no radio shows to do.
I did one with Steve Dennis for a little bit.
I don't think I was in high school then.
Yeah,
plus,
I mean,
I really didn't care.
But I understand why he wants to hang out with his kids.
Sure. But just show up and draft tonight. Is he gonna?
He'll be there when he gets there, is the latest I've heard.
I'm not drafting for him. My teammate Scotty is not drafting for him.
No, Scotty will.
No, he won't.
Yeah, he will, because I'll ask him to.
Well, Judah's going to end up with not a very good team then.
No, Scott will work at it.
No, he won't.
Scott has unbelievable integrity.
You know how bad of a look that is to everybody there? To have somebody not there and somebody else in the league drafting for that person?
Yeah, but
that's embarrassing.
Scott will be...
No, Scott's on my team.
Scott will be so good about it. And here's all I'll say. Scott, Jason's running a little late. Do you mind making a couple picks for him? And he'll say, sure, I'm
someone bring a friend.
I'm happy to do that.
Someone bring a friend tonight. Scotty's on my team.
Nah, Scott will handle it.
We're not. No, then Duda doesn't get to ever talk about his team because he didn't draft it.
Of course he does.
No.
It's a product. When did you become such a you know what?
That's a product of our expertise.
Do you have any idea when that happened?
When what happened?
When you became a you know?
When I didn't put up with shenanigans?
What happened?
That's been forever.
Be a nice guy.
I'm a nice guy all the time.
It's not that hard.
I'm always nice. I spend my whole day being nice.
No, you're not. You're not nice when your team's not doing well.
Well, they should do better then.
What's the score now? 9, 10?
Who cares?
20?
I haven't checked. 6-0. I'm sure Judge hit another homer.
Well, I hope he did. It's fun watching him. 6-0 in favor of the Yankees. So you got that.
Sack fly by Ben Rice.
All right, we'll come back with one more hour. We promise you Tim Fitzgerald tomorrow as we preview Kansas State. It'll be our last preview. We'll try to get him for 2:45 tomorrow. We look forward to it. We'll be back. The Bob and Jeff Show, KFH.
Radio.
It's wild, it's wacky, it's slick, it's savvy, it's the Mad Cat Daffy, fractured, ding-a-ling, ring-a-ding, loony, zany, side-splitting, rib-tickling, slap-happy, scuzzy, dreary, irksome, tedious, banal, pointless, smutty world of...
The Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
Let's be real. I'm all about being real. Well, I mean, I'm real all the time.
Dynamic, isn't it?
Jeff Lutz.
Let's do. Let's be real.
We like it.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Stand by for action.
All right. We are back. Hour number two, the Bob and Jeff Show. KFH Radio. Bob Lutz, Jeff Lutz, co-hosting Max Power, our producer and engineers, 869-1240. That is the number for the show. The IHOP hotline, don't forget. Pancakes, all you can eat until September 15th at IHOP. All right. Cardinals still scoreless in their game against the Brewers.
Who's pitching for the Cards?
Miles Michaelis, who had, I don't understand how he pitched well, but he did. And here we are in the seventh of a scoreless game. And not that I'm going to belabor that, because most of the listeners don't care about the Cardinals. And I completely understand that. This is Royals country, and they're not playing today.
All right.
And that's this is all I got. You don't want to talk about your team.
Sure don't.
We talked a lot of college football in the first segment. If baseball's off the table for us, for you, then
Talk about the Royals. I don't care. They deserve to be talked about. They're playing well. They have heart and spunk and
did you know all five of their starting pitchers rank in the top 20 in the American League in earned run average now that they've added Michael Lorenzen?
Who, seven scoreless last night. Good for him. Good for them.
That's incredible. I don't think you'd say any of them are going to win a Cy Young Award, but they're all very good. And they throw a guy out there each and every night that's capable of shutting a team down. And when you have that, and you have Bobby Witt, and you have Salvador Perez, and you have Vinny Pasquantino, you can probably do some damage. I heard somebody on radio talk about the two teams that he thought, one from each league, that not many are talking about, but that he thinks could win it all. One was the Royals out of the American League, and as I've tried to say here, as I've said here, not tried to say, the Padres and the National.
I think could win it all. They're playoff teams. We'll see who's playing well, and it's not even who's playing well. We'll just see who wins in October. It doesn't necessarily mean you're playing well if you go and win 22 out of 3 in a wild card series. Or, you know, it's just you go win. That's all you really need to do. You can play every game to win. It's a different type of managing style. The stakes are obviously different. So, I don't know. The winning the World Series now is unpredictable because there are 12 teams in the tournament, and it seems like there's no real advantage for any of them.
Right now, your wild card teams in the American League are Baltimore, Minnesota, and Kansas City. Boston's 3.5 games out of that chase, and Tampa's 6.5 games out. Boston's really the only team we need to talk about as being a threat, and I'm not sure how big of a threat they are.
Tampa would have been maybe because of their pitching, but one of their pitchers, I think, just went back on the injured list. Their offense has been kind of what it's been all year. Of course, Dylan Carlson has had been playing fairly well for them.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about it.
Well,
that's another one that it's just unbelievable. Of course, Dylan Carlson, former Cardinal. And then in the National League, the wild card, Arizona, San Diego, Atlanta. Atlanta's righted its ship a little bit, but the Mets are only 1.5 games out. The Giants, 3.5 out. And then the Cardinals at 5, the Reds at 5.5, the Cubs at 5.5. I suppose
feel like to be in the race.
I suppose you say they're not completely out of it, but they're completely out of it.
You'd think, but it's 5. It's 5 games. And that could change in a week.
But you got to pass the Giants and the Mets. And the Mets are playing well.
I told you Francisco Lindor is a great player. And he might win the MVP. No, he won't. Shohei will, but he could finish second. And
don't get crazy on me. He's got 20. He's hitting .266 with a .815 OPS, 5.5 WAR. I'll give him that. I guess he's really good defensively. He's good offensively. Steals some bases. He's a good player. I don't know that I think of him now as a great player.
But he is.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Did you read Jeff Passan's article?
No, I don't read Jeff anymore.
You don't?
What'd he say?
Just read it.
Well, what'd he say?
He stole the virtues of Francisco Lindor.
Well,
I don't think you can come away from that and say he's not a great player. I just don't.
He's a good player.
No, he's a great player.
I don't agree. I'm sorry.
Name 5 players better than him in the National League.
Okay, you want me to?
Yeah.
All right. Hold on a second. And I'll do that with ease.
No, you won't.
Of course I will.
There aren't.
It's what I do.
There aren't 5 National League players better
than
him.
Here's what I'm going to say right now.
I'm going to go look at this home run list. And
no, I'm not looking at home run lists. I'm looking at WAR. And I don't even think WAR is a great way to completely gauge. Shohei Ohtani. Too bad he got hurt, but I think Ketel Marte's had a better year than Francisco
Lindor. He's not a better player.
30 homers. Ketel Marte is hitting. He's got a .930 OPS. So more than 100 points better than Lindor. A .298 batting average. I think Ohtani, Marte are better. And that's probably, I'd probably put Lindor third.
But that's not a great player?
No, because I'd
really
put Matt Chapman fourth. And Matt Chapman's not a great player. And he's got equal WAR to Lindor.
There is up to 2 great players in the National League this year.
Matt Chapman's, you look at his numbers, he's a defensive standout.
No kidding.
And that means something, but he's not a great player.
So you're saying that there might be 2 great players in the National League?
Well, I think L.A. De La Cruz is on his way to being a great player.
There's no on this way, either great or you're not.
Well, what about Marcelo Zuna?
Okay, he's had a fantastic year. Francisco Lindor is on a Hall of Fame track. Marcelo Zuna probably is not. Probably.
Well, I don't think he is either, but you're talking about a great player this year.
Hall of Famer is pretty great.
This year, Marcelo Zuna is a great player.
Right.
And by the way, remember when I talked to you about Victor Scott a moment ago? He's 3 for 3. And if you can unlock that guy, that's a potential great player too.
Victor Scott's great, but Francisco
Lindor. Did I say he's great?
So
I said potentially He's great.
Okay, well, you're...
The potential is in that kid to be a great player.
Well, your standard for great is best player in the league. That's it.
No, not necessarily. I'll tell you this. Aaron Judge, Bobby Witt, Gunnar Henderson, Juan Soto, they're all great, and they all play in the American League.
Right.
They're all great.
We were talking about the National League.
Jose Ramirez, great player. What, now you don't even believe in him?
I don't believe in anybody.
You're a sad individual. You're a pathetic excuse for a fan.
If you're so good, Jose, go win us a game like Aaron Judge did. Go do something in the games that matter the most.
Mookie Betts is a great player. Corey Seager is a great player.
He's a great player?
Yeah.
He's
Francisco Lindor's right there. He's a borderline great player.
He's at least as good as Corey Seager.
You know, I would have said, is Nolan Arenado a great player now?
He was.
Was Paul Goldschmidt?
He was, yes.
Why aren't they great anymore?
So you lose it.
Is Salvador Perez a great
player? Same reason Walter Johnson isn't great anymore.
Is Salvador Perez a great player?
Man. It's hard to say no to that. Because every time you think that he isn't, he proves basically that he's still got it.
He's nowhere in the discussion in WAR.
Nor will he ever be because he doesn't walk and he's not a good base runner and his defensive metrics have typically not
been
good.
What he is a tough out and a leader and the backbone of a franchise.
That's going to be, we were talking about easy Hall of Fame cases early, Joey Votto and Mike Trout. Salvi's going to be a tough one.
That's going to be a tough one.
To be basically the best at your position offensively for a decade or more, that's going to carry some weight, but so many other things drag him down.
Now let me ask you this, and I'm afraid Victor Scott just got picked off, so that doesn't bode well for my... This team drives me bananas. Now I've even forgotten what I was going to ask you.
Let me ask you this.
That's not going to jog a 70-year-old memory.
What did I just talk about? Salvi Perez.
Yeah, it's not going to jog. Let me ask you this. Is Yadier Molina a Hall of Famer?
Probably.
Not first ballot?
It's going to be close.
The greatest defensive catcher in history?
I bet he'll get over 50% of the vote on the first ballot. And whatever happens after that, he'll be in at some point.
Doesn't he have the respect of everyone the longevity?
There's so many guys that are going to look at the WAR, and that's all they look at. And they don't really delve into it as much as maybe they should.
The fact that he played at a high quality for so long. Now, the last year wasn't very good, but up until then, it was pretty good.
Right. He was basically good.
Catchers don't do that.
Throughout his career, and he had really good offensive years. The beginning and tail end of his career were not great offensive years, but several in the middle, he did have really good years.
Yeah, whatever. We do the best we can. And I'm addicted to the game of baseball. That's just all there is to it. I can't get enough. When the season's over, I'll be in a depressed state.
You can come over and watch the Pacers.
No, I don't watch the Pacers. What I do is watch Hot Stove with my friend Anthony Castrovince.
Good guy.
We did kind of hit it off, you know.
I wanted to introduce myself to him, but I couldn't place him until...
He was here for the statue unveiling.
Until we were leaving.
Writing about it for MLB.com.
It's like, I know I've seen that guy everywhere.
You never give the background of anything. You leave that up to me. And I'd take care of it.
And then I was like, oh, that's Anthony
Castro. Why are you ignoring me?
Because you were ignoring me. I was telling a story, and you trampled all over it.
Well...
That's why.
We just held the fastest man in history at third on a base hit to right with one out. What do you think of that strategy?
What's the strategy now?
Victor Scott had to kind of wait to see that the ball got through, so I didn't see that part of it. So now I understand better why he was held. Forget what I said.
I thought he'd been picked off.
No, they called him safe. They challenged it. It was very close, but they upheld the ruling. All right, we're going to get with Jim Johnson here shortly, a guy I've known for a while now. He's on the board of League 42. Max, let's go ahead and give Jim a call. He's on the board of League 42, and he's involved in an event that we're going to talk about very shortly. So we look forward to that.
What is it?
Well, I will tell you when we get Jim on the phone. Max is working on that as we speak.
Do I know Jim?
I don't think you do. I met him through League 42 and Cargill. Cargill's involvement has been monumental in our success, and Jim helped spearhead that.
Beautiful.
That's pretty good. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Bob, I'm great. How are you?
Good. You're on the Bob and Jeff Show. This has to be a very big highlight for you in your illustrious life.
Definitely the highlight of the day, for sure.
Well, let's talk about this event that's coming up to benefit Remington Young. Tell us a little bit about her life, and then what's the event that's coming up, and how can people get involved?
Yeah, sure. Appreciate the time. So Remy was a young gal from the Wichita area. Your typical All-American girl, cheered competitively, was just a superstar. She cheered at Mays High and then ultimately reached her dream of cheering for the Kansas Jayhawks. So she had everything going for her. She was that person that all the kids looked up to, you know, a clear leader, always willing to help, smiling, always happy. She loved everyone. And then on May 22nd of 2022, Remy took her life. Turns out, you know, she'd been battling mental illness and depression for years. And so within a few months of her passing, the Love Like Remy Foundation was formed. Remy's amazing mother, Amy, wanted to take this tragedy and turn it into something positive. So, you know, just in short, our mission with the foundation is to end the stigma associated with mental illness and to provide education, support, and care so that more lives are not lost in this manner. So giving you a whole bunch of bad stuff. And now, if it's okay, I'll tell you some of the great stuff the foundation's been doing.
Absolutely. And I want to mention that this fundraiser, it's a gala, really, coming up September 12th at Prairie Hill Vineyard. You'll tell us more about that in a moment. It's a way that people can support all of this. So we'll get to that in a moment. But, yeah, tell us some more about this young lady.
Yeah. So, Love Like Remy, one of the things we did was we partnered with the Pando Initiative here in town and the Mays School District, and we've put student advocates in all five Mays elementary schools, and this is helping just hundreds of young kids feel safe and have someone that they trust just to talk to, you know, when they need to. Amy's shared Remy's story at several high schools, colleges, universities, all in the effort to end the stigma. And then there's this program at K-State named the Bandana Project. Student leaders are trained on just basic mental health crisis response and then given a green bandana that they put on their backpack and they wear around campus. The thought is that if someone is struggling, they know that that person with that green bandana will listen to them and can connect them with help. We want to pilot something like that in the Wichita area. And then one more. We want to make mental health awareness and training more commonplace in high schools. Everyone should know that they can get help when they need it, and they shouldn't feel bad about asking for help. So that's what we're trying to accomplish here. So all those great things lead us to the gala because all of those things require funding. So we're having our second annual fundraiser on September 12th, as you mentioned, at Prairie Hill Vineyard. The name of the event this year is Voices of Hope Gala. Remy's middle name was Hope. There's going to be amazing food and drinks. We're going to share Remy's story, but also Katie Myers from Katie Save. Her parents are coming to share their story. Katie was a Stanford soccer player with a story very similar to Remy's. You may have seen her on Good Morning America and some of the other morning shows. So they've shared their story a lot, and we get the privilege of hearing them talk to us on that night. Pat is coming to provide entertainment. You know, he's wonderful. Plus, we have a ton of great stuff to auction off that I think will interest your audience. We've got a signed Bo Jackson jersey from the 1989 All-Star Game, where he was named MVP. We've got a Bobby Witt jersey. We've got a Patrick Mahomes signed helmet, Chris Jones jersey, VIP weekend with Wichita State baseball, a whole bunch of K-State, KU stuff. And then, you know, even stuff that's not for the sports fan, too. So just a ton of stuff. Everything we raise is going to go towards the foundation and used to support, you know, those efforts of ending the stigma. So that's it. We hope to see a bunch of people there.
Sounds awesome. For more information on Love Like Remy or to learn more about the Voices of Hope Gala, go to Love Like Remy, LoveLikeRemi.com, or look for Love Like Remy on Instagram or Facebook. Sounds like it's going to be a great event. I know you and your wife are very involved, and kudos to you for that, and thanks for coming on the show today to talk about it, Jim.
Yes, appreciate the time, Bob. Thanks a bunch.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. That's Jim Johnson talking about a big event coming up here next month. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll visit with Scott Russell. He's going into the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame coming up in October. Ceremonies in Topeka. We'll explain his story and why he's going into the Sports Hall of Fame next.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
I am snake bitten trying to get guests on the show. I feel like I'm no longer in my zone.
Really?
We're waiting for Scott Russell. Hopefully we get him. Max will keep me posted. All right, here we go. Scott Russell joins us. Maybe the most difficult guest I've ever tried to get. Hey, Scott.
Hey, is this Bob?
It is, yes.
I told you right now I sound like Marge Simpson's sister. I do not smoke unfiltered Marlboros. just a lot of teaching. I was a bit under the weather for a couple days to start the year as a teacher, so I've kind of lost a bit of my voice.
Well, you're up there in the Kansas City area doing some coaching, some strength work. We'll get to that in a minute. Formerly Scott Russell, of course, from the University of Kansas, out of Ontario, Canada. So how did a guy from Ontario, Canada become interested in javelin, hammer throw, and track and field? And was hockey ever a part of your life?
Let's start with the hockey question. Honestly, grew up, bunch of friends played hockey. We played road hockey every weekend through the fall and winter until there was snow. I had a friend's coach asked me if I was ever good on skates, and I have to say good enough to stand on them, but I could never play the game. He was looking for a goon in the back line. I would be probably not nearly as good as the slap shot duo, but the track and field thing, I was a terrible ninth grader in javelin throw, and I nearly quit before I really fell in love. And the next year, my coach encouraged me to come back out to continue throwing javelin. I just continued to get better every single year and was fortunate enough to get recruited to the University of Kansas by Coach Lori LaRoe, who was my first coach at KU, and started out with some good success and had some changes through my career there and continued.
You, like we mentioned, coaching strength and conditioning stuff now. I'm curious just how that related the strength and conditioning aspect of what you were able to do in the javelin, because that's an event unlike most in track and field, and I'm sure the muscle development that you want to work on is quite different also. So did that become a love also, just not only throwing the javelin, but working to get in shape for it?
Yeah, it was kind of the complete package, trying to figure it out, to be honest. In 2004, my coach at the time, Doug Reynolds, who was at KU and I was training post-collegiately as a professional, he was looking elsewhere in terms of increasing the finances for his family, and I totally understood, but he said, if I ever leave, you need to learn how to train yourself. And I said, Doug, really? So he recommended a couple books, so I started reading, tried to figure it out, messed up a whole bunch on myself, and eventually got good enough at it that I could get strong and fast. And I ended up writing all my own training from 2004 through about 2008, through the Olympic year that I went in Beijing, and kind of fell in love with that process. I started working under our national javelin coach, Larry Stanky, out of Lethbridge, Alberta, up in Canada, and found a new system by Dr. Anatoly Bondarchuk. And it made me fall in love with the idea of a stimulus creating change in the human body to create a performance. And then I worked at a middle school in Basser, Linwood, Kansas, for about 13 years doing middle school PE. In the town that I live now, Eudora, Kansas, the high school strength and conditioning position opened. And I would totally regret not applying for it because my kids are in the school district. And was lucky enough to get an interview. They offered me the job 2 days later, and I couldn't resist it. It was difficult to change, but it's been one of the better decisions I've made for my family, as well as the community I live in. Now, teaching at Eudora High School, I get to take all of my failures and successes of training myself, and I get to help a bunch of young students learn how to train and perform in their own sports and hopefully help them along the way achieve some of their goals.
Scott Russell is our guest. He is going into the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame coming up in ceremonies in Topeka in October. You mentioned earlier in the interview, Scott, that you almost quit as a ninth grade javelin thrower. So I'm curious, based on that, what happened to spark your interest again? What did you unlock, and what are the keys to being a successful javelin thrower?
Honestly, the interest came because my brother was an athlete and older than me. So was my older sister, Angela. They were a couple years ahead of me in high school, so I always had them kind of as influences in what I did. So I was always trying to beat my brother at the things he did. And freshman year, I was terrible, and something clicked my sophomore year. I was very lucky. Kind of let my high school coach at a Windsor, Ontario, Brenton High School, talk me back into coming out. And that next year, I won our provincial championships for under 15. That's the hard thing in the sport. To give the best kind of example is you can take a baseball and you can throw through the middle of that baseball through a lot of different angles. But imagine trying to throw a 9-foot-long stick through a can of soup to get a clean flight. And that's the difference between throwing really far and maybe being off 10 or 20%. It's such a technical event that you're off a little bit, you lose 10 or 20% of the throw. But the reality is that the consistency of training, and I kind of fell in love with javelin, not even just javelin throwing, but the Olympics. I had a fourth grade teacher, Sharon Fluke, who kind of introduced us to the Olympics in fourth grade. And we did a 2-week unit learning about the Olympics when the Winter Olympics were in Calgary, Alberta. And I just fell in love with the idea of the Olympics, and I thought I would be an Olympic bobsledder. I had a few athletes out of Windsor, Brad Snyder, who was a shot putter, and then Jason Tunks. They were both national record holders. He was a discus thrower for Canada. And I had those guys going ahead of me a couple years in high school. So I saw what they did coming to the States, then became Olympian. So I really had some great role models growing up too, not just coaching and the consistent. There was a lot of different consistent things in my life that allowed me to be successful in sport.
I saw where you said that you've lived in Kansas far longer than you ever lived in Canada. So tell us what you are doing now. We have alluded to it a couple of times, and then just also what Kansas has come to mean to you.
Well, so I came down to Kansas in 1997 in the fall to be part of the KU athletic department, be an athlete there. I stayed and trained because I had connections here, and it made the situation easy to be able to do what I needed to do. I met my wife in 2005 before I moved home. So it was always a comfortable place, and it was really about the people I had met, which is why I signed here and not other places. And I kind of feel the same way. Met my wife, had my children. People has always been a continual thing in my life, and interactions with people. And that's kind of how I got into education, is interacting with kids and influencing them. And honestly, now that we've been in Kansas, it's an affordable place to be. I love the culture that is here. We can get to a lot of places in the entire country, as well as just a 12-hour drive back to Windsor, which is on the border with Detroit. But truthfully, it's the people here in the heart of the country that kind of is the reason we're here, and the reason why we even moved into the town of Eudora where we're at is I love where I'm at. I love the community I live in, as well as the opportunity to interact with the people.
Scott Russell, our guest, again, going into the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame, a two-time NCAA track and field national champion, a nine-time Big 12 champion, indoor and outdoor, in the javelin and hammer throw. Do javelin and hammer throw go together well? Are those events that you commonly see individuals competing in?
They are absolutely as far away as they possibly can be. So the story is, I started throwing hammer in high school in the summer just so I could have an idea going into college to how to throw the hammer. I was pretty good at it in high school, but we only threw it in the summer during club track. My second week of my freshman year, I took my bicycle down the, not Campanile Hill, but there's a steeper hill behind Caruth O'Leary on the KU campus. I went over my handlebars and I separated my throwing shoulder. I tore a couple ligaments. So I was kind of stuck, basically that fall with a left hand. I did not have my throwing arm. And I spent the fall doing a lot of indoor weight throw turns with my left arm, learning how to turn better and better. And I think that really aided me in learning the event, as well as having, again, that consistent exposure to that thing. Fell in love with the event and the speed of the event. And it just happened to be something like I could figure out both events and completely keep the techniques separate because they are not even close to the same. I had a lot of success with it. But when it came down to it, javelin was my love. It's pretty cool now. I kind of wish I ended up at some point up in Kamloops. Dr. Bondarchuk, who's one of the systems I use, is up in Kamloops, Alberta. And he's now training a lot of the Canadian hammer throwers. And we just had two Olympic gold medalists in the hammer throw from Canada this year at the Olympics. So I missed my time for the hammer throw, but I love doing javelin.
Interesting story. I didn't think those two were very well related, but it shows your athleticism to be able to conquer both. Scott, thank you. I know it's a big honor for you. How do you feel about going into the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame?
It's cool. Honestly, before it started, I didn't really know about it. Being that I was born and raised in Canada and now become an American, and now I live here, the opportunity to be recognized for my own accolades, but truthfully to be recognized with some of the people that are also being recognized, their names stand well above me, and it's a true honor to be recognized for the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame, for sure.
You made it through. Your voice held up. Good job.
So glad you caught me on a good day this week.
To us, you just sound Canadian, so we love it either way.
Oh, fantastic. I'm a Canadian Marge Simpson.
Thank you, Scott. We appreciate it.
Not a problem, Bob. Thank you for the interview. I appreciate it.
All right. Scott Russell, good stuff. These people are all great. We handled it.
Yeah. You should know these things.
I'm paying attention. I got nine things going on.
Get to 4 o'clock and then you can pay attention.
I got problems with gates and our internet's out at our building, and it's just never stopped.
What do these people expect you to do?
Nothing, but I want to know what's going on. They don't expect me to do anything. That's not the point.
Well, then why bother you during your show?
I bothered them. You can't even, I don't even want to talk about it.
Why do you not focus on this show?
I focus on this show just fine.
Well, focus.
If anybody's not focused, it's you, who asked Scott Russell, tell us about what you're doing now, 3 minutes after he told us what he's doing now.
Well, I missed that part, I guess.
So is that focus?
Yeah, I was focused.
Not on apparently that part of the interview.
Well, I fouled up. What do you want?
Scott was great. All these guys and women going into the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame have been great. We've knocked a lot of them out. Mark Mangino not responding. What's happened there?
I don't know. He's just done with you?
Two attempts, nothing.
Interesting.
I mean,
that's not right.
We're tight.
Well, I guess not. Maybe,
I thought we were.
Maybe he's mad about the Guardians and won't come on.
Not everybody lives and breathes. You can tell by the crowds in Cleveland.
Crowds are fine. Give them a product.
Your crowds are okay. The Royals last night had 12,000. What's going on with that?
I don't know. That's not.
I don't get it.
It's not very Royals-like. They usually get behind their winners.
That's a good team, an exciting team. They play clean baseball. They're fun to watch.
Was it raining?
No. And here they are struggling. Now, the Angels aren't a big draw, but don't you know going in that, hey, we got a chance
to win. We're going
to win. You'd think that they'd be out there in droves to watch that.
You would think.
But that's not been the case recently. We'll see if it improves.
We sure
will. When they get to the playoffs, that place will be jam-packed, and every Royals fan you talk to will be like, I've been here all year. No, you haven't. That's where I have difficulty.
You making something up that somebody's saying and then arguing against
them? Yeah, I don't like it.
Maybe they won't say that.
They'll say it.
Well, maybe. Probably not.
They'll say it, and they'll say it loudly.
It is interesting, only 12,000. That doesn't make sense.
Now, what am I to make of the Cardinals winning 2 of 3 against Milwaukee? What am I to make of that? What if any meaning does that have? Now, they go to Minnesota for 3, and you better hope they continue to.
Well, you better go do something.
But what am I to make of this?
Whatever you want to make of it. They won 2 out of 3 against the best team, second best, third best team in the National League.
And they've been playing terribly.
Cut into that lead, and now it's 9.
Well, I'm not worried. I'm not even worried about that. They're not going to win the division.
I understand. That's my point.
10, by the way. But they are still in the wild card hunt. They have a very difficult schedule. After Minnesota, they come home to face San Diego. This could be... They could be, these next 7 games, they could go 1-6.
Or you might be rejuvenated.
But at least I'm interested. You're not even interested.
Not really. Not until...
You're a terrible fan.
Not
I hope
until
your
changes
wife,
are made.
I hope your wife just... And the sad thing is, if they were to win 4 of their next 5,
No. Yeah. Make some changes. I'm done.
No, you're not.
I've reached the breaking point.
No, you haven't.
Make some changes.
You know, Jeff, I know you so well. Because
4 out of 5 will just be a mirage, and it won't mean anything, and they won't have changed. They had a 1-5 road trip. They batted in 57 innings. They scored 1 run in 5 innings. They scored 0 runs in 50 innings. So 1 run or fewer in 55 of 57 innings. That's... What we're getting. So 4 or 5, great. Go beat Texas and some other dog team, and we'll love you. But try to win.
Don't you hate it that I just laugh?
I don't care
because
what you
do. I've heard you for so long, And you've been doing this forever.
It's frustrating when you don't have an organization that truly tries to win.
Well, then change.
I can't.
Change
don't
it
say
up.
Something dumb. Don't say something dumb.
If you
know I'm not going to change.
If you feel that way about the Guardians and you feel like it's hopeless.
It is hopeless.
Then why stay with it?
Because there will be a
I
day.
I thought you were going to the Mets.
There will be a day when David Blitzer takes over as owner. There will be a day, hopefully, when Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff go elsewhere. And maybe there will be a different approach. Just talking themselves out of risks all the time, and we'll play it safe, and we won't get Charlie Condon, who might hit 50 homers. We'll take Travis Bazzana because he might hit 290.
I hope Travis works out for you.
Me too.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. We think it's the three-man booth tomorrow. We'll be out at Side Pockets tonight for our Bob and Jeff fantasy football draft. Look forward to that. We'll be back tomorrow. See you then.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.